glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving pranams at the lotus feet of our Sadguru, the Purna Avatar of the Kali Age, His Divine Worship, Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and thank you so very much for joining me on Morning Glory on this glorious Thursday morning, May the 5th, 2015. My name is Karuna, and this program is coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe, where the exact time right now is 41 minutes past 9 a.m. The ashram is gearing up for a big day tomorrow when the first lady of the Sai movement, the silent spiritual force behind the Sai mission, will be fondly remembered and honored. On 6th of May in 1972, Srimati Ishwaramba Raju passed on after calling out to her son, God incarnate Bhagwan Baba, at his Vrindavan ashram in Bangalore. Today, around the globe and in every part of India, including Prashanthi Nilayam, this day sees millions of acts of kindness being performed in her name, in her honor, and in her glory. You see, life in Prashanthi Nilayam always flows full speed along this river of love. So as always, Baba's dedicated doctors are performing life-saving surgeries for the poor and the needy as we speak, and these are patients from every possible social, economic, cultural or religious backgrounds. Baba's top-notch schools and university colleges are getting ready for the fresh academic year that will begin on June 1st, 2016. And in this once parched land where water was only fluoride-laden at one time, there is ample clean water supply today. A place that a few decades ago was described as stone's throw from the Stone Age is today a well-laid-out township with a thriving ashram, modern amenities, a town that is home to India's leading world-class schools, university system, hospitals, museums, planetarium, airport, railway station, great connectivity to the national highway, paved and tree-lined avenues, and an international and pan-India community that calls it its home. Behind this miracle is a humble, unlettered, simple peasant woman who was born into a rustic family of meager means. A person who never made it to the Forbes magazine or Time magazine's list of who is who or to the list of most influential Indian. She was never featured or recognized as a kingmaker or an agent of colossal change that she became, ever so silently, simply and sweetly. But her soul was evolved enough and her heart was pure enough that the Supreme Consciousness selected her from the billions of aspiring souls to make the divine descent into human form. While human experience bestows upon us this illusion that we can somehow pick our life partner or our friends in life, only God has the privilege to pick his parents. And even God needs a vehicle of a mother to incarnate as an avatar. Such is the glory of motherhood, and such is the glory of the mother that God picked for his recent visit to planet Earth in the divine form of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. In this connection, Bhagwan Baba declared, and I quote him, "Ishwaramba was the chosen one. I chose her to be my mother. That is the intimate relationship between Mother Ishwarama and myself." Unquote. In the annals of Sai history, Mother Ishwaramba is possibly the one person who deserves the title of a divine saint worthy of veneration and worship, because everything from the present-day Prashanthi Nilayam to the Sai healthcare network, to the Sai education system spread over 4 university campuses, to the multiple schools, to the Sai drinking water supply, everything owes their origin to this divine lady. Yes, you and I are who we are, heirs to the divine throne and divine legacy of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, only because of this one person, Her Holiness Mother Ishwaramba. Today on Morning Glory, let us recall her life, her times, her dilemmas, and her power as a silent game changer through this 2-part radio documentary dedicated to Mother Ishwaramba. Over now to the mother of the avatar who became mother to the world. I hope you will learn as much as I did while researching this topic. We eagerly look forward to your feedback, dear listeners, and your comments and suggestions to this episode of Morning Glory, as well as to any Radio Sai program. You can always reach us at listener@radiosai.org. And before I play the file and bid you sairam, I would just like to dedicate this special episode of Morning Glory at the lotus feet of Her Divine Worship, Mother Ishwaramba. Have a listen, please, and Jai Sairam. Mother Ishwaramba is the mother exclusively selected by the Supreme Divine Consciousness for his descent in human form as Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. What qualified the Blessed Lady for this historic honor? That is a truth that only the divine may know. But what we do know is that she was humility and simplicity personified. Her persona exuded a love that embraced all humanity, especially the poor, the sick, and the needy. Mother Ishwaramba was born in modest circumstances in remote and rural India during the British Raj at the tail end of the 19th century. She had no access to any formal education. Confined to her little world of fending for her family, she lived a pious and contented life in an isolated village with no access to the outside world. Yet today, Sai devotees spread across the great nation of India and the world adore her and strive to live by her example. Her life, just like the story of the Lord she bore, is truly a saga of sacrifice. So blessed is her soul that out of the millions on this earth, the Lord decided to confer upon her the greatest role a woman can ever aspire to play. Mother to the avatar, mother to the world. Today, let us learn from the life of this humble and utterly simple but enigmatic lady who bore the blessed son, destined to be the teacher to the world. We will seek glimpses into her life as we piece together the puzzle of how she alone, among millions, qualified for this honor. On May 6, 2001, during Ishwaramba Day celebrations, Bhagwan Baba openly declared,
"Ishwaramba was the chosen one. I chose her to be my mother. That is the intimate relationship between Mother Ishwaramba and myself."
What a blessing and a privilege to be the chosen mother. Yet, this role came with its own motherload of responsibilities. As Mother Ishwaramba's life reveals, her path was a mix of challenges and lessons. As she tossed between agony and ecstasy. As the chosen mother whose little boy came into her life with his own game plan, she was torn between her maternal instinct to protect and nurture her darling son and the need to let go when he declared his mission. She had to accept his divinity and stay as a devotee, receiving his benedictions. But in her role as a mother, she steered his love for humanity into tangible acts of philanthropy. In retrospect, few women have influenced the destiny of this planet as silently and as significantly as this godly mother did.
Bhakti, bhakti, bhagavant guru, chatushnam bhakwe, tinke padvandana,
Ishwarama began as Namagiriyamma. During a divine discourse on Ishwarama Day 2000, Bhagwan Baba remarked,
Ishwarama was born in such a poor family that she did not even have proper food to eat. All that she had to eat was ragi sankati. Ishwarama was illiterate. When I see the egoistic attitude, perverted mentality, an ostentatious behavior of the present-day educated people, I feel it was better that Ishwaramma did not have any schooling.
Modest, humble and pure, her name shines in the league of the likes of Mother Kaushalya, Mother Devaki, Mother Yashoda and Mother Mary. Neither she nor her husband Peddavenkamma Raju questioned her father-in-law Kundamma Raju when he changed her name from her birth name of Namagiriyamma to Ishwarama. The reason for this unusual move was the dreams of the family preceptor, Venka Avaduta, instructing the family matriarch of an impending divine boon. So long before Swami was born, Namagiriyamma became Ishwarama, meaning the mother of Ishwara or God. Many years later, a pandit, well-versed in the Puranas, asked Swami a pertinent question. Was your incarnation a pravesha, an entrance, or a prasava, a conception? Turning to Ishwarama, seated in front, he asked her to tell what had happened that day near the well after her mother-in-law had warned her. Mother Ishwarama revealed that her mother-in-law had dreamt of Satyanarayana Deva and had cautioned that she should not be frightened if something unusual happened to her through the will of God. That morning, when Ishwarama was at the well drawing water, she saw a big ball of blue light rolling towards her. She felt it glide into her and she fainted. There, you have the answer, Swami said to the pandit. I was not begotten. It was a pravesha, not a prasava. When the sacred moment arrived in the early hours of the morning on that holy Monday, the day dedicated to Lord Shiva, on the 23rd of November 1926. The chosen mother had just consumed blessed food or prasadam given to her by her mother-in-law after an hour-long Satyanarayan puja. She relished the sanctified food, and before the sun had spread its light on the Ratnakara home, the house was bright with jubilation, joy and gaiety. The long-awaited son was born. Those present were blessed to witness the first miracle of the Divine Personality. Baba's biographer, Professor N. Kasturi, describes it thus.
A mat covered with a thick bedspread had been placed in a corner of the room where the labor had begun. And now the baby was placed on it by the grandmother. Suddenly, they found the bedspread rising up and falling down on either side of the baby. The grandmother grasped the child and held it close. And to her utter shock, she found a serpent coiled beneath. Of course, snakes there were in plenty at Puttaparthi, creeping through crevices, crawling along the walls and hiding in holes. But a serpent in the lying room pretending to be a bed? It was the role of Adi Sesha for Lord Vishnu, who rested on its coils. This was the incarnation's first miracle. When Mother Ishwaramma was asked about this epic event, she confessed that she had been so filled with joy at the birth of a son that she had never even noticed the agitation all around.
Being a mother to such a special child proved to be a baffling experience for Ishwaramba, one she would have to grapple with for decades to come. For everything about her little boy was so unusual. With his bewitching looks and captivating smiles, little Satya became the darling of all around him. He was born with talents in music, dance and poetry, and his divine leelas enacted right from early childhood would bring joy to many. As for Ishwaramba, she was the one who fretted over Swami every moment and suffered the most from his indifferent to this world attitude. Why wasn't his behavior like that of all other children, she wondered. Satya never asked for any particular food or clothes. A bundle of clothes would be brought from Hindupur or Anantapur, and one of the grown-ups would call the children in the family, asking each one to choose for himself. But Satya always sat aloof until the others had made their choices, and then he would take whatever was left behind, rejected by the others. He never seemed to have any desire or wish of his own. But his face would light up when he saw the other children happy. When asked by his mother what he really wanted, a smile was his only answer. The mother would hug him close and try to bring him to confide his wishes to her. "Satya, tell me, what do you want? I will give it to you," she would say. "I do not need anything," was his only answer. "Whatever you give me, I will accept. That is enough for me. I will not choose." Years later, Ishwaramba would still wonder what made her little boy so deeply sober and serious. At last she began to think if the label Brahmagyani or a realized soul the village elders had stuck on him was indeed a tribute and not a mockery. Dr. J. Lakshmi Gopinath, the warden of the Anantapur campus of the Sri Sathya Sai University, is a long-serving devotee of Bhagwan Baba. She was privileged to grow with Bhagwan as her guide and guardian and has had the opportunity of watching the Divine Mother at close quarters for many years. She recalls one of Mother Ishwaramba's major concerns for her son.
"And that's what it is, that Bhagwan Baba descended to the earth and became the wonderful son of the wonderful mother Ishwaramba. I have visited their house in the village. Naturally, they were all village houses. And Mother Ishwaramma came to stay in the old mandir. Baba asked her. But she would also go home and all that. But the most wonderful thing was, she would always be near Swami and very diligently see to it that he eats well. Because Swami was a very small eater. He never bothered about his food. So whenever Swami was turning this side or that side, she would slowly serve some food on his plate. And he would look at her mischievously. That was a wonderful sight to see. Whatever it was, she knew he was God. She knew it. Much more perhaps than the others did. But she never forgot that he was her beloved son. That was the most bewitching part that all of us witnessed. When Baba used to sit, and she also used to sit, and he would talk to her so lovingly, tease her, and then she would laugh, and then she would be so happy those moments. But there were times when Mother Ishwaramma was extremely concerned about Bhagwan. And she would always feel that she should eat better. Of course, it was in the old village days, you see. And she would bring the food all the way from home and serve it to Bhagwan. The sisters also used to bring. And of course, we were witnesses to it.
It took Ishwaramma a long time to reconcile herself to this avataric trait of her son. Whenever she was around, she personally supervised the preparation of the menu for Swami by going into the host's kitchen. She believed that Swami would eat a few more spoonfuls if the cuisine was Telugu, or better still, if it was genuine Rayalaseema, the region to which Puttaparthi belonged. When Swami was at Jamnagar with the Rajmata of Navanagar in Gujarat, Ishwaramba feared that the Gujarati dishes might not be acceptable to her son. She smuggled herself into the palace kitchen and sought permission to prepare a little charu, a soup based on boiled pulses, so Swami would have at least some food of familiar taste. Mother's concern for Swami extended to every detail of his life. Apart from his Spartan food habits, another subject which troubled her was Swami's travels. Swami was giving himself so freely to seekers across India, and she was always apprehensive of him leaving Puttaparthi, even if it was for only a day, to a nearby city or town. So imagine her distress when she heard about the planned trip to East Africa in 1968. She was extremely nervous. Not much was known about Africa in those days, and the popular impression was that it was a dark continent full of wild animals, savages and cannibals. Ishwaramma had heard this folklore and feared Swami would be in danger if he went there. She resolved to have the trip cancelled and expressed her reservations to someone involved with the expedition. The person replied, "Mother, do not worry. Swami will be visiting only big cities where he will be absolutely safe. No threats from animals or savages there." Ishwaramma was dissatisfied with the reply and felt hurt that the person was making light of a serious matter. She approached someone else, and he too gave her a patient hearing and then replied, "Amma, have no fear. Swami will have a very high security protection." Ishwaramma felt frustrated that no one was taking her misgivings seriously. She sought out a senior devotee and conveyed her worst fears to him. This devotee said, "Mother, it is true there are many dangers in Africa, but how can they affect Swami? He is God, is he not?" Hearing this, the mother became furious and shouted back, "You fool, I know Swami is God, and you know he is God, but do those savages and wild animals in Africa know he is God?" Perhaps Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath's father, late Sri Vitthal Rao, was among the devotees, that Ishwaramma had initially sought help from to cancel the trip. She explains.
And one of the incidents that I would like to narrate, Baba's trip to Africa was decided. And all those who were concerned with it, they made all the arrangements, etc. What mother did, she came to my father and then she said, Vittalra, Yemi Vittalra. Mirandro Swamini Adaviki Papiche Sestunare. Uttu Mirevuchi Akra Pedapeta Yenegunayata Pulilunayata Chirutalunayata Akra Wunde Manishlo Nalaga Pedaga Manshune Tinestarata Ma Swami Devunaru Uddu Babu Chapande Swamiki Avu Africano Yedo Okati Swami Akra Velakurdu. మా స్వామి ఎలాగా అక్కడ ఉంటాడో, చిరుతలు పులులు స్వామి ఇంతే ఇంత ఉన్నాడు, వద్దు బాబు మీరు స్వామికి చెప్పాలి. షీ వుడ్ వీప్ అండ్ వెన్ స్వామి వుడ్ హియర్ ఇట్ హీ వుడ్ జస్ట్ స్మైల్ దట్స్ ఆల్. బట్ స్వామి డిడ్ గో టు ఆఫ్రికా అండ్ ఇట్ వాస్ వెరీ సక్సెస్ఫుల్ అండ్ ఆల్ ద బ్లాక్ పీపుల్ ఆల్సో రివియర్డ్ స్వామి. సో వండర్ఫుల్ ఓవేషన్ టు స్వామి ఇన్ ఆఫ్రికా. And how he loved the Africans, how we treated them. And at one time he said, there is absolutely no difference between man and man in color. He may be black, he may be white, he may be whatever it is. And it took up for an African who had been sort of badly treated by the whites. And then he said, it is character, it is love matters. It is not the color of the skin. And there is a proverb actually, beauty is skin deep. That's all about it. We have got just our outer sort of skin. You remove our skin, we are just the same. Flesh and blood. And it's only to Africa that mother did not go. He would take mother everywhere he went.
For Ishwaramma to witness her son Satya grow into a master who people twice or thrice his age hailed as the Avatar Sai Baba was a complex journey. During those distressful moments, she vacillated between being a mother and a devotee. Clearly, the transition from the doting mother to the adoring devotee was difficult. Early in life, her son Satya had declared his plans. He was here on a mission. His devotees were waiting for him. This strange talk was a far cry from the dream of his parents that he get an education and seek a secure clerical job in the government, bringing financial well-being and social respectability to the family. Hearing of Satya's strange pronouncements and behavior, when Mother Ishwaramma rushed to Urvakonda to see him in 1940, she was shocked to find him surrounded by an adoring crowd. But when pressed to identify his parents, Satya calmly and concisely said, "They are Maya or illusion." Maya, explained Ishwaramma, and fell in a faint. When she came back to her senses, she sat by Satya's side, tears rolling down her face. "Satya, speak to your mother," she begged. A few minutes of silence ensued. And then he said, "Who belongs to whom?" It was not a question, but a cold pronouncement. Baba continued, "It is all Maya. It is all Maya." This moment is unique in the annals of human experience, for who can fathom what Ishwaramma must have felt in her heart? Nothing could have prepared her for the jolt as her little Satya declared himself to be Sai Baba, guru to the whole world. She alone bore the brunt of this metamorphosis of her dearest son to a discreet and distant Sai Baba. Yet, despite declaring her as Maya or illusion, the young Satya was always conscious to play every role in his life to perfection, for millions would look up to him as a role model. Hence, he continued to confer the respect, concern and love on the mother as an ideal son should, and the mother on her part let her son pursue his mission despite all her misgivings about his welfare and safety. But it wasn't all that easy. Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath recalls Ishwaramba's inner struggle to reconcile his divinity with her maternal instinct as she describes the birthday celebrations of those early years.
The birthday celebrations of Bhagwan were also celebrated in a wonderful way, the old mandir, with all the festoons, all the decorations. The whole altar would be decorated wonderfully, the huge lamps burning all the time. It was almost heaven. And Baba would be taken in the palanquin around the village, where all the villagers would stop the palanquin and then touch the feet of Swami and give flowers to me. And Baba would bless them with so much of love. He would go around the whole village. And the men would be cornering out the crowd. And in the middle, we ladies would be in front of the palanquin walking backwards, not forward. So as we walked backwards, we could see Bhagavan in the palanquin. And then the palanquin would come, the procession would come, and the palanquin, you see, slowly would be put down, Swami would get up, and he would just shake his kapani, and plentitude of vibhuti would just be scattered over there. At these moments we would feel, yes, Baba is our own, but he looks so divine, he looks out of reach. And Baba being young, with a flock of hair, and with a wonderful beaming divine face, we lost ourselves in that wonderful darshan of Swami. But what did the mother do? When Swami got on to the palanquin, it was his birthday, and he was taken round the village, mother did not go with the procession. She would sit in a mandir and sob. So there were many elderly ladies. Why, Amma, why? Your son has become God. Why do you weep? And the words she would say, Amma, he is no more my son. He is God. And that would hurt her. Because if it is a son, she can fondle him, she can talk to him, whichever way she likes. But she always felt, no, I cannot take that sort of advantage. My son has become God. That was what she felt all the time. And Baba would come to her and say, Yendu kedustavu? Yendu kedustavu? Yadundu? Yadu makkudu? And he would be so kind to her. And then give her prasad and all that. Well, that day would pass like that. That's the birthday of Bhagavan. That's what it would be. Well, she would wipe her tears. What else to do? That's what it is. The son has become God. That is one of the greatest truths one could never erase out of the mind of anyone. So the mother accepted it, whatever it was. And a very wonderful quality of the mother was this. She was the main person in the house, and she would look after every need of everyone there. Her daughters, they were just nearby to her house. The mother, the daughters, and all of them, they would bring the food. Mother also would bring along with them. And she was so meticulous that whatever was prepared, the item should be something which Swami liked. And she would really admonish some of her daughters and tell them, we must prepare something that Swami likes. At least let him eat that. He hardly eats. Great love and concern for her divine son. And the same concern for all the devotees.
Soon, the Sai mission grew. People from distant lands and different backgrounds came to behold her dearest young son. They treated him with reverence and sought so much from him. She felt concerned for his well-being, but to her credit, the simple lady embraced all as her own. As the years went by, Ishwaramba had to adjust to the many other changes that followed the ever-growing glory of her son. She strained to retain whatever contact she could, as Swami's time was taken up by the needs of his devotees. Sometimes the rumor mill around the village got to her. People spread strange and unpleasant stories about her son. She felt concerned. Often she would come rushing to him and pour her torrent of protests at the things he was doing, like proposing to build the current Prashanti Mandir on a patch of land on the outskirts of the village. Swami sat in patient silence, letting her have her say, and merely smiled. "Speak to me, tell me something in reply," she asked in frustration. Swami softened. "Why do you bother with people's talk?" he gently asked and assured her. "There will be no jungle and no snakes when I go there. There will be hundreds of pilgrims pouring in every day, and that place will become a Shirdi, a Tirupati, and a Kashi." She learned quickly to stay open to her son's ideas, which were totally new to the local population. He promoted oneness, foretold of a future when the world would converge at their little village, which till then did not even have a road connecting it to the next town. Aggrieved people came to her young son seeking solace. Their sorrow pained her deeply. Ishwaramba had a soft heart, especially towards women who were widowed by fate or ostracized by society, as if their misfortune was infectious. She also sought out young women deserted by their husbands and left alone and helpless. She was always there for the devotees and tried hard to get them to meet her son, for she knew they would find solace in him, even if she wasn't sure why or how. Many a times she would put in a good word for them, Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath explains.
Whoever came, she would talk to them with such love, and she was as simple as a child. And if anyone was crying, any devotee was crying, she would go to them and console them. She had no differences, she never felt, "I'm the mother of God, and they should come and fall at my feet." That aspect was never there in the mother. She was so simple, so loving, so concerned about all the devotees. And if any devotee was sick, she had, you see, the privilege to go and sit near Swami wherever he was. She would go and tell him, "Swami so-and-so is sick, Swami. Please, Swami, give her some vibhuti. Please talk to her, Swami." This is what her whole life depended upon. All the devotees, everybody there, should be happy, should be well, and they should be at the feet of Bhagavan, so happy and so devoted, that she would also feel very happy.
If ever she took any liberty of her accessibility to Swami, it was for the sake of some distressed or disconsolate soul. In one instance, there was a couple from West Godavari who had come with a terribly sick child and had waited in Puttaparthi for a week. Due to financial constraints, they were not in a position to extend their stay and were about to leave crestfallen. As a last resort, they met Ishwarama, and when the mother heard their plight, she took the boy by his hand and immediately led him upstairs to Swami's room and pleaded with Swami to cure the child. Swami gave her a patient hearing and then calmly said, "Chustanu," meaning "I will see." But no, she was not satisfied and insisted that Swami show mercy to the poor family right now. And finally, Swami gave in to her prayers and healed the child. As is said, a mother's prayers never go unfulfilled. Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath says,
"She was born in a village. She was not a sophisticated person, not at all. Ingrained in her was the sense of love and charity. She would help those ladies for whom it was difficult to sort of make both ends meet. And she would even bring them saris and give it to them. And as I said, any lady who needed something, money or clothes, or if she was sick, some kind of a treatment, my God, she would just go to Swami. And she would tell him, if Swami was also preoccupied, the wonderful mother would go behind him And he couldn't help it. He knew the earthly mother, how wonderful she was, how she loved him. He would come with her among the devotees and she would show Swami, Swami this one, Swami that one, Swami. And Swami would help them. It was like an indelible experience, never to be erased. And that is why the years may go by, but such incidents remain so clear as if it happened just yesterday.
Mrs. K. Vasumati Devi heads the service wing of the Andhra Pradesh Sai organization. It was during the 60s that word reached her that Swami was going to create Amrutam or nectar on the Vaikunth Ekadashi, an auspicious day for the Hindus. Not only that, she had heard that he would put the divine nectar onto every devotee's tongue with his own divine hands. There were no telephone lines those days. When the news reached her, she began her journey from her native Iluru to Puttaparthi by changing 7 buses over 2 days. She finally reached Puttaparthi at 8:45 p.m. on Vaikunth Ekadashi. By this time, it was too late. This is what she recalls, and I quote, "When I entered the ashram that night, the residents of Prashanthi Nilayam showered sympathy on me, saying, 'Oh, you have come only now? Swami has just finished distributing the Amritam and has retired upstairs.'" Unquote. She was crestfallen. But immediately, the thought of the compassionate mother Ishwarama came to her. The mother could not bear Mrs. Vasumati's sorrow. Defying all protocol, she grabbed Vasumati's hand and rushed her to Swami's dining hall, as Swami had already gone upstairs. Vasumati tells us what happened next, and I quote, "The next moment, the mother held my hand and hurriedly led me to the first floor of the mandir. With great concern in her voice, the mother said to Swami, 'Iluru Papa arrived just now after changing 7 buses. I could hear the conversation standing at the doorstep. I was gripped with pain as I felt I had disturbed the mother at an odd hour and was also apprehensive about Swami's reaction.' Swami then mischievously smiled and said, 'Did the girl ask you to recommend her situation to me?' Mother replied, 'No, Swami, Papa never asked me to do this. I myself took pity and brought her here.' Then, with a bewitching twinkle in his eyes, Swami said, 'If that is the case, poor girl, take this bottle and give her Amrutam.' With motherly intimacy and a gentle frown, Mother said, 'What? I have to give her, Swami? Did Papa come all the way to Puttaparthi, changing 7 buses, to have Amrutam from me? No, I will not give it to her. Swami, you have to give it to her.'" Bhagwan smiled at this compassionate outpouring of the mother. After finishing his meals, Swami was full of smiles and charm and told Mother, "I myself will give it to her." Then Swami came to me and asked me to come forward. "Please open your mouth." "Just because I asked you to open your mouth does not mean you should swallow the bottle." "I will put the Amrutam. Swallow it." So saying, Swami joyfully put Amrutam on my mouth. My bliss was beyond description. Unquote. Another Jayalakshmi who offered selfless service for many years was the medical officer Dr. Jayalakshmi, who served in the Sri Sati Sai General Hospital. She remembered how Mother Ishwaramba was a pioneer in serving expectant mothers and babies. She advised the local village women against superstitions such as magical rites. She sat with the patients while they were questioned, waited for the diagnosis, and held them firm as the dreaded needle was administered. When the ladies were admitted as patients, she climbed the hill to the hospital to make sure they knew there was a mother interested in their recovery. Ishwarama, the woman whose life and sacrifice changed the course of human history, was at heart a simple, loving mother, and it is the poignancy of her unique relationship with her son, whom she grew to adore as her god, that must be recalled. What also should be recalled is a pious nature, a heart which went out for others, just as a flower gives out its fragrance selflessly and relentlessly. Ishwarama, Mother to the Avatar, Mother to the World. Mother Ishwaramba bore the exemplar of supreme perfection. Her son too left no stone unturned to demonstrate how a worthy son should revere the mother. The mother was always Baba's top priority. Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath was a witness to the divine relationship between the Lord and the chosen mother.
Baba left Puttaparthi to go anywhere. You would find Mother Ishwaramba sitting in a corner and sobbing. The love between the mother and the son, I have not witnessed it. But I've seen with my own eyes the wonderful divine drama. The concern of the divine son for the mother. And the love and concern of the mother for her divine son, whom she felt had gone far away. She would sit and sob.
The divine concern was mutual. The doting son always placed her first and also through her life demonstrated to the world the ideal life of a woman. Dr. Jayalakshmi again takes us back to those days.
And if you were to look at him at that moment, it was a kind of a divine concern. It was not at all human. And his eyes, when he would see the mother, would be full of that love. He loved the mother. Let us understand the great lesson that Baba is giving to humanity and the wonderful contact and the love and the concern between the mother and the son, which I suppose we can never witness in the ordinary world. She did every day regularly the religious rituals, did the puja, and straight off she would come away to the mandir, you see, and sit the whole day till she went home, because she would always love to be near the proximity of Bhagavan. And at home, she looked after the house, and she looked after her husband so well, with so much of concern, that is Venkamma Raju Garu. He was a wonderful person, Venkamma Raju Garu. So she looked after the husband as a Hindu, true wife would look after. She looked after the needs of the house, just as I said, a mother would look after. And above all the time in her mind would be that she is the mother of the Great One. Yet, it's not the way in which she would have liked. He has receded because, she would say, he is God. That's the way she felt all the time. But her love, the motherly love, was always there.
The affectionate mother, an ideal wife, a dutiful daughter-in-law, Ishwarama straddled all her roles with ease. For all her actions were rooted in pure and unselfish love. And during the birthday celebrations of those years, her role was extremely significant.
And Swami's birthday was celebrated in this small little auditorium of those days. It had a dais, and Swami's chair would be bedecked, kept there on the high dais. And it was the anointing ceremony, because it was his birthday. Swami would select some senior Sumangalis. The Sumangalis among the devotees, senior ones, and some younger people I was blessed also to go with them. And with lovely silver plates with kumkum, halvi, flowers, whatever it is, the Sumangalis would carry it. And a silver bindi, you see, one elderly lady would carry it. It would be full of water, scented water. And there would be the procession, the village procession, not the actual Nadaswara, but the village procession. And these elderly ladies would take all these holy things with them, and then the garlands, the flowers, all of them. And the youngsters, like the whom Swami would have named, they would just follow. So it would be packed, that small auditorium, or what you would call in those days, they would call it that shed. It would be packed. Well, even a small little creature couldn't go through. So packed with people, eager for them to see the anointment of Swami. So with the Nada Saram and all that, the father, the mother would come first. And there would be a senior Sumangali, which Swami would have named, and he would tell that she should have a silver vessel, or a small, not a big vessel, a small one, full of the oil, scented oil and all the ingredients. She should hold it in her right hand, and one by one they should come, and this lady holding that small little container, she would have a flower. So they should dip the flower in that and put it three times on Swami's head, each one of them who come. So first would be the mother. Swami gave the first status to the mother, not because he was only the mother of his physical body, but to show to the world a son should revere the mother. The greatest example. First the mother, then the father. They were so simple. Swami had such a shock of hair then. And then the oil would come over Swami's face. So when everything was over, Swami would go and then go to his room, have a head bath, come back and sit in a new kapini. Then the bhajan would go on for a long time. And I cannot describe the splendor on his face. But how could I ever describe that splendor which we human beings have never witnessed before?
Not only did Baba demonstrate that mother comes first, he never promoted any stifling social taboos. Contrary to the customs of those days, he treated widows with the same respect as Sumangalis or married women.
And when Venkama Rajagaru died, one beautiful incident I can narrate. When after his death, what happened? This anointing ceremony actually took place, whatever it was. And the same arrangements were made. And Swami, first the mother would anoint. Swami waited and waited and waited and waited. Time just fled. And the mother did not come. Swami got up from his decorated chair, quickly got down the steps from the dais, and there were little rows of rooms beside the small auditorium. And in one of the rooms, I brought mother there. And she was sitting there sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. What did the divine son do? He consoled the earthly mother with so much love. And do you know what he said? It's something which could be recorded for eons. He said, Chudu, Dasharatha sechinappudu mukkuru bharyalu papo pogottukunnaru. Idi melu kada? Okade. And put his head on her head and asked the lady to bring that bowl of anointing oil. He held it in his hand and he asked the lady to give the flower, and he said, dip the flower to the mother. So he bent his head low. Right. He took her hand and made her dip the flower in the oil, took her hand and made her put it on his head thrice. Oh, it was a beautiful sight. And the scene that was enacted was a message for the whole world to know. A son, whether divine or mortal, has got to serve the mother, has got to love the mother.
At another time, Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath recalls an incident from her childhood when Mother Ishwaramba suffered a hand injury.
Her hand hit the front seat very hard because with a jerk, the car came to a halt. What a sight, what a sight. He took her by the hand, and it was my room. Of course, mother's was there, father's were there. My room, I used to sleep alone there. Quickly, mother got ready a cot and everything for the Divine Mother, everything ready. So, she was brought to that room. I was there standing. Who came into the room but the concerned son? Him little, he said, took her hand and put a lot of VB pear spirit on the hand. Him little, he consoled her very benignly. And then she looked up at him, Swami, Noppi Swami, Enda Saripotudi, he went away. Then, the whole night, she was groaning with pain. And I didn't sleep because Mother, the Divine Mother, she was groaning. I didn't know what. Midnight, Swami came thrice. Thrice. I was the witness. It has come in from Sanatana Sarthi also this. So I was helpless. I didn't know what to do. I would go to her, catch hold of her and say, Amma, I hope it's not too hurting you too much. Only these words. I don't know what to do. The Divine Son, coming to the mother who gave him the body, with so much of love and concern, trying to sort of soothe her, and giving the Divine Vibhuti. She should have gone to a hospital. You see, it would have been a terrible thing. But the great God saw to it that overnight it was cured. And the way he spoke to her, and the way she looked at him, Swami, Noppi Swami, oof, even till today I cannot forget it.
Despite Baba following his own path of spiritual leadership, Mother Ishwaramba's bonding with her son was one of tender love and respect. Ever the doting mother, she never smothered his commitment to his mission. Of all her nobility, there are three selfless desires of Mother Ishwaramba which have etched her name in gold in the story of the Satya Sai avatar. Simple living and high thinking personified, she was responsible for setting up three models of selfless love for entire humanity. Few know that Sai education, Sai healthcare, and Sai water projects that have been serving millions free of cost all owe their origin to Mother Ishwaramba. Bhagwan Baba has publicly acknowledged her as the direct inspiration for his mammoth social service projects known throughout the world. On one occasion, Baba said,
"Once she told me, Swami, our Puttaparthi is a small village. Since there is no school in this village, the children are forced to walk long distances to attend schools in the neighboring villages. I know that you are the ocean of compassion. Please construct a small school in this village." I asked her where she wanted the school to be built. She said she had a piece of land behind her house. She wanted the school to be constructed there. As desired by her, I got the school constructed. Though it was a small school, the inaugural function was a grand affair, attended by many devotees. The next day, Ishwaramma expressed her happiness over the inaugural function and said that she had one more desire. She wanted a hospital also to be built in the village. She said, "Swami, I don't want to put you to trouble. If you are troubled, the whole world will be in trouble. And if you are happy, the whole world will be happy. So, if it gives you happiness, please construct a small hospital." As per her wish, I got the hospital constructed. Bejawada Gopala Reddy, a highly reputed person in those days, was invited to inaugurate the hospital. The inauguration was attended by thousands of people from the neighboring villages. Ishwaramma did not imagine that this would be such a grand affair. Next day, she came up to me and said, "Swami, it does not matter even if I die now. I have no more worries. You have fulfilled my desires and mitigated the suffering of the villagers to a great extent." I said, "If you have any more desires, ask me now." She replied hesitantly that she had yet another small desire. You know that the river Chitravati isn't spayed during the rainy season. But in summer, it dries to a trickle and people do not have drinking water. So, please see that some wells are dug in this village. I told her that I would not stop with these small wells and that I would provide drinking water to the entire Rayalaseema region. Ishwaramma said, "I don't know what Rayalaseema is. I am satisfied if our village is provided with drinking water."
Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath recalls how the noble mother gently nudged her worthy son to such selfless acts of charity.
So the mother was instrumental in getting the hospital built in Puttaparthi near the old mandir. Baba agreed to the mother's request and the hospital was slowly built, and that is how patients would come and they would be treated without the doctors or anybody taking money for the treatment. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful heaven. And another thing which the mother wanted from Swami was, you see, a sort of a school for the children. Because the children from Puttaparthi, they had to walk all the way to Bukkapatnam or somewhere a little far away if they had to study beyond the primary section, you see. That is why a school was constructed, because the mother prayed and sort of adorned praying and praying to Swami, and almost compelled him with devotion to build a school for the children. So a hospital for the needy, a school for the children, and so many other things, the water facilities, because the women had to go and draw the water from the wells. Then started the pipe system. So water flooded Puttaparthi. What else did human beings want? Shelters, food, water, and then a school for their children, a hospital for their well-being. All these things came up like an exhalation in a jiffy, and small Puttaparthi grew and grew and grew in magnitudes, and later to become what we see today, the mandir, the lovely mandir that we have there.
Despite the pedestal her noble son placed her upon, Mother Ishwarama remained her humble self, never boasting about her status as the mother of the world teacher that her son had emerged. Like all other devotees, she addressed Bhagwan as Swami and was full of reverence for him. It was these virtues, along with her golden heart, that made Ishwaramba so very special. And Swami too rewarded her with many beautiful experiences. Speaking during her Samadhi celebrations in 1999, Swami said,
"From that day onwards, Ishwaramma never stayed at home and started staying in Prashanti Nilayam. Every day, in the morning and evening, she used to come upstairs and talk with Swami. She also understood my divinity very well. When I appeared in the form of Lord Shiva to her, she would ask, 'What, Swami, why are you adorning the snakes around your neck?' I would act innocent. 'Well, I don't have snakes on me.' She would move away saying, 'Look, there are some snakes inside.' But later, on not finding any snake inside, she would ask for forgiveness. Like this, on many occasions, she had the experience of my divinity.
But one of her greatest blessings was a vision she had a few days prior to passing away, which she confided to another elderly lady. We know of this directly from Peddabottu Amma, a devout lady from yesteryears.
"Peddabottu," Ishwarama said to me, "I want to tell you something that happened to me, but tell no one else." I sat closer and said, "What is it? Tell me." "Our Swami's God," she whispered. I laughed. "Why do you laugh?" she asked. "No, no, I was not laughing at you. I'm only happy you have realized it now." "Well, tell me, how did you come to know?" I asked. "You know, I have been having high fever for 4 days. Swami came to me then." "In a dream?" I asked. "No," she said. "He really did come to me when I was rolling restlessly in bed." "Ammai, how do you feel?" he asked. "My whole body is aching," I replied, looking up at him. "Then what can I tell you? It was not he that you and I know. It was Ramachandra with kiritam and kodandam, crown and bow." I raised my folded hands and struggled to sit up and get out of bed. But in a few moments, he became Swami again, gave me Vibhuti Prasadam and said, "The fever will go," and went. "You are indeed blessed. What a rare piece of luck," I exclaimed. "None of us has had a vision of Sai Rama as Ramachandra Murti while fully awake and alert."
Ishwar Amba's passing away was in itself an example to humanity. May 6, 1972. At the time of her passing on, Mother Ishwar Amba was in Bangalore. 11 years after the event, Bhagwan Baba publicly acknowledged her goodness when he described her last moments in a public discourse. He explained that the proof of the good is the way they die. Genuine devotion is evidenced during the last moments. Baba recalled how during the summer course of 1972, the mother had finished her bath, had her coffee as usual quite happily, and had taken her seat on the inner veranda. All of a sudden, proceeding to the bathroom, she cried out thrice, "Swami, Swami, Swami." At this, Bhagwan responded, "Coming, coming." Within that period, she breathed her last. Bhagwan Baba pointed out that no greater sign of goodness is needed. She went so smoothly and easily with his divine name on her lips. She had no need to be served or nursed. Bhagwan also said that God's name will come to the memory at the final moment only to a very few. The mind usually seeks and stays on some object or the other, some jewelry or valuable, or a relative. She did not even call out to her daughter or granddaughter, who were physically present there, but to the Lord she had borne as a son. In her passing on, as in her life, she held out lessons for all. Her final moments bear testimony to the authentic consummation that an ideal and virtuous life must strive for. They say great and noble souls never die, but continue to inspire after death. Ishwar Amba was one such being who unceasingly is concerned about Swami even after her passing on. During a discourse on May 6, 2001, to the utter amazement of the audience, Bhagwan Baba disclosed,
"You may be aware or not, but even after 30 years of her passing away, Mother Ishwar Amma continues to express her love for Swami in a number of ways. Even to this day, she moves around in her physical body. At times, she comes to me and expresses her motherly concern for my well-being."
This is how intimate the bond between Swami and his mother remains. She continues to stand out as an ideal wife, a sister, a mother, a grandmother, and a devotee. The Lord chose her as his mother perhaps not only as a reward for her past deed, but also, as Professor Kasturi noted, in appreciation of what she was capable of in this life. For Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath, Mother Ishwaramba was always a role model, and she explains why.
We have read in books about great women who stand as ineffaceable sort of models for all women. But I, as a young girl, and even later, have witnessed the divine drama. I can never forget it. And it was not propaganda as we do these days. She was wonderful. And then somehow, I do not know, because she was so simple, she was so loving, no ostentation, sincere in what she said, childlike, and did whatever she could do for her godson, wonderful person. She was a very, very great lady. In many sort of magazines or whatever it is, there are many social societies. They sort of published, they did this one, they did that one. But Mother Ishwarama stands head and shoulders about all of them. There was absolutely no ostentation in whatever she did. There was concern. There was love. And she knew somehow she should go to her divine son, plead with him, and get these things so that everyone is happy there. So she was a tremendous model.
That is the sterling quality of the divine soul that the Lord chose to bless to be his earthly mother. And with the supreme teacher to guide her, Mother Ishwaramba absorbed every lesson Swami could impart to her with his glance, his word, smile or gesture. Through her role as a mother, she rose to be a living saint, radiating simplicity, humility, love and purity. Ultimately, the great soul we know as Ishwaramba reached a state where she took every event and emotion, every thought and activity as a gem-set doorway through which she could cognize the One and finally become one with the Divine. And today, even as she continues to look out for her son, she also stands out as a key player in the saga of pure love that was unleashed on November the 23rd, 1926. To Ishwarama, Mother to the Avatar, Mother to the World, let us offer our love and respect, dedicating ourselves to the highest ideals she lived and breathed so naturally.
Yeah. Sai Narayana.